This is the Film Effect with Tiff.
And we're going to make a new rule. Whenever I'm in here, you hear me typing. Whether you don't hear me typing, whether the fuck you hear me doing in here, when I'm in here, that means that I am working. That means don't come in. How do you think you can handle that?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Film Effect with Tiff. And I am back this week solo. That's right, everyone. I picked a movie that made everyone run for the hills. And now, as a last resort, just to give you content and keep with my schedule every Tuesday in the morning so you have something to listen to, all of the film people out there that are listening to my podcast, that are dying to discuss movies or even just hear other people discuss movies, I've resorted to solo podcasting. I'm not sure if this is a sad day or a great day, depending on how you want to look at the circumstances, but I'm here. I've got something for you. So if you've been following my Instagram page, if you've been following my Facebook page, you probably know the movie that we're about to get into. And I don't know what it is with this movie. Maybe you guys don't like Jack Nicholson. Maybe you don't like the eyebrows. Maybe you just don't enjoy movies about isolation during isolation, which, listen, I understand. I totally understand. It's not an easy time for us. It's definitely not. How are you, by the way? Have you been, how's it been for you out there, guys? For me, I'll just tell you personally, let's go on a personal note. It's a little wacky. It's a little wacky. I am, certain days I'm pretty good. I'm enjoying the quiet mornings, enjoying the back deck and, the nature. Did do some running lately, something I haven't done in a very long time. My mind's definitely buzzing around with a lot of creative ideas. I've got photography ideas going on, thinking about movie things. But movies have been on the top of my list in terms of enjoyment. So, you know, I've, as you know, if you've been listening, been reaching out to friends from the past, and, this movie felt important, felt like a essential movie for a quarantine. And it's a classic, you know, The Shining. I'm sorry, I haven't even mentioned the movie yet. So let me just mention that to you before I get into the next thing. We're talking about The Shining this episode, friends. And it is a Kubrick classic. Kubrick director, Stanley Kubrick, known for many films. But this one, I think, is one that everyone has heard of, even if they haven't seen it. But, you know, I don't know what it is. I could not get a guess. People do not want to talk about this movie. I can't figure out why that is. Is it just too close to home, maybe, even though it's not winter and it's spring? It must be something about this movie that I could not seem to get people to get into the pod seat with me, even from a Zoom call, which is a little bit sad. So this is what you've got now. You've got me ranting about this film. So let's get into it, guys. What do you say?
Well, that sounds fine to me.
Okay. So right off the bat, stats, as if this were baseball and it's just movies, but I'm going to get into it anyway. So The Shining, 1980. It is directed by our friend Stanley Kubrick, who is no longer with us, written by Stephen King, the novel. Stanley Kubrick did the screenplay. And oh, I'm missing one more credit here. Let's see. Diane Johnson. Diane! Did not mean to diss you. Nice work. I'm sure this was not an easy movie to adapt, even though Stephen King, a lot of his books have been adapted. And so maybe that's a lie. Maybe most of his movies are easy to adapt because he's quite descriptive. But this stars Jack Nicholson, Shelley Duvall, Danny Lloyd as our little boy. And what's weird is his name is also Danny in the story. And Jack's name is Jack. Can we even, like, what was that meant to be or what was that? That's very bizarre, unless that casting was very orchestrated. What do you guys think? Either way, great cast. And oddly enough, little Danny Lloyd, I looked him up recently. And he just did one small thing after this film. And then after that, he did not act again. He lived a completely normal life, which I thought was kind of interesting because this is a pretty big movie. And I think that him playing Danny as a little boy is iconic at this point, you know, to hear him throw that voice and say, "Red Rum," is kind of like everyone knows that. So interesting that he never did, you know, launch an acting career from this. Maybe his parents saw this movie and said, "You know what? You're done. You are just done, kid." Maybe that's best. You know, I don't know what the results of being in a movie like this could do to you as a child, but hey, you know what, Danny, you did a good job and you will always be in my mind in that hallway with that funky carpet and that adorable Apollo handmade looking sweater. I mean, the visuals in this movie are just amazing on so many levels. I don't even know where to start. Okay. Maybe we should start from the beginning. One thing I will say is I have been on a Stephen King kick lately. And I do think following this film with Dr. Sleep is worth it, even though some people don't think Dr. Sleep was such a great movie. And I don't think it is a great movie, but I think that if you want to follow along with the story and understanding of this, you know, this idea that Stephen King brewed up in his crazy brain, that following it with that film is important. At least to me, it was definitely more enjoyable. The fact that I understood, the storyline from the first to the second. And you know what? I don't read, guys. I have not read these books. I sometimes listen to the audiobooks, but I'm a big Stephen King fan. I love all of his stuff. The Outsider, which was just a series on HBO, which was also from one of his books that happened in the past few years. Amazing, 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 amazing. Cannot say enough about that series. If you haven't seen it, put that on your list as well. But let's get into this iconic story of so many things. Now I'm going to just read the IMDb description here of The Shining. And what it does say, if I can find it, why is this taking me so long? I'm so sorry, everyone. A family heads to an isolated hotel for the winter where a sinister presence, influences the father into violence. While his psychic son sees horrific forebodings from both past and future. Yeah, definitely. You know, this story has a lot of things in it. In the beginning, we see Jack, and he is a guy who obviously has a bit of a shady past with his family, some issues with drinking and some violence. And he's, you know, he's signing a contract with these people about this hotel. A normal writer and former teacher agrees to take care of a hotel which has a long violent past that puts everyone in the hotel in a nervous situation. So pretty quickly after he brings his family in person to meet the man in charge of the hotel, we find out that the last person that did this job of watching over a hotel during the dead of winter actually went crazy and killed his family and then killed himself. So just a little sidebar that they tell you in the beginning. And he doesn't seem to be too thrown by that. You know, I always find it funny in these movies, and it's typical of a horror film, I guess, if you want to go there, that they hear a horror story like that, you know, and then they just, I don't know, stick around. I mean, it's like, just so you know, something really horrible happened here, but it's going to be fine for you guys, you know? And so then they just decide to stay. But I do think it definitely shows you that he doesn't seem too worried about that. And I think that there's also a theme of what is fate in these films. And if people can actually dictate what is about to happen to them in any different way.
Well, I'm looking for a change.
You know, I don't know if Jack's character of Jack Torrance had much of a choice about this. As the story goes on, I think that Stephen King is playing around with the idea of fate and how we can't really run from what's in store in the future for us, whether it's good or bad. And it's more about persevering and overcoming in some way is how I would look at it. You know, and I think if I'm going to get deep with you guys, that this is part of the reason why I really enjoy these kinds of movies at this time. I know a lot of people might say to me, why do you want to watch a horror film during this like weird epidemic, pandemic, you know, situation? And the thing is that like, you know, what I'm interested is in the human condition and how we are able to overcome things that we can't escape from, you know. And in this story, we've got Jack Torrance who, you know, is looking for an opportunity. He's looking for a shift in his life. He's looking for change. He's obviously, you know, trying to change the path of his career, the path of his life. He sees this opportunity, he takes it. But at the same token, he doesn't address in so many ways the real issues that are lying underneath. And so what happens is this hotel creates a pressure cooker situation of him having to face these demons. And instead of overcoming the demons, they overcome him, which I find really interesting. And also with his wife, Shelley Duvall's character, Wendy, and with his son, whose story continues on after this entire, you know, thing happens. And he has to struggle with his own demons based on what happens in this story. So, you know, there's a lot going on here. But right off the bat, my favorite thing about this film is it's kind of a slow take. And I did talk to a few of my friends about this movie, and I actually watched it with my daughter Stella, who was wanting to see it because she's heard so many things about it. And Stella, I was trying to get you on here, but I wanted to get this out to people before my next episode. So she's not here with us, but she was with me when we watched it. And I don't know sometimes with young people if they're going to run from a slow movie, but we really enjoyed it, actually. And she found it to be better than movies that speed up and kind of rush you through the story. This movie is visual. Kubrick is a visual filmmaker. The cinematography is awesome. Just even the scenes through the hotel. It's not just the hotel. I think the hotel had a big part of why it looks the way it looks, but it seems very orchestrated, all of the scenes, you know, the bathroom with all the red and the white, the hallways with that interesting pattern, the wide angle shots that just kind of pull you in, you know. And he does a really good job of making you feel the way these people feel in the space, and that it's so big, but at the same time, it becomes so small in some aspects because they can't run from what they're in, even though this is a massive place. I'm going to go to some trivia about this film real quick. Apparently, filmmakers tend to strictly follow what is known as the 180-degree rule when filming two characters in a scene. Although the camera may change angles many times over the course of a scene, it never moves more than 180 degrees from its original position. Keeping it less than that keeps the characters on their established sides of the screen, while going over causes the character's reverse position, disorienting the viewer. Now, Kubrick, of course, he breaks the rule. Now, why did he do that? What are you going to tell me with this interesting stuff? He breaks the rule during Jack's meeting with Grady in the men's room, visually hinting to the viewer that Jack is becoming more like Grady. Oh, Kubrick, you're so slick. There's a lot of really interesting things about this movie. One thing that I really like about it is that you really don't know where it's going. They don't explain things so much that you would understand them. Even the beginning of the film, you've got Danny, the little boy, and it's already pretty apparent that he has some issues. He talks to his finger in a very deep and creepy voice and calls him Tony. And at some point in the film, Tony completely takes over when Danny can no longer handle what's happening for him. But one of the most interesting scenes to me is when he meets, what is his name? Oh my God, I'm really out of it today. Halloran, who is also someone who has The Shining, Dick. Now, Dick, he basically calls Danny's ability out to him when they first meet in the hotel before he leaves them to be by themselves. And they have a really interesting exchange. And I do think that, you know, it's a really important part of the story. And you may not even know what it is to start. I remember I was sitting there with Stella and she didn't really understand what that meant. You know, what is The Shining? What is that supposed to mean? But it's, you know, it's a great moment. I'm going to read you actually some of the quotes from this scene. So Dick is, do you know how I knew your name was Doc? You know that what I'm talking about, don't you? I can remember when I was a little boy your age, my grandmother and I could hold entire conversations without ever opening our mouths. She called it shining. And for a long time, I thought it was the only two of us who had the shine. Just like you who thought you was the only one. But there are other folks who don't know it or don't believe it. How long have you been able to do it? Why don't you want to talk about it? I'm not supposed to. Who says you ain't supposed to? Tony. Who's Tony? Tony's a little boy who lives in my mouth. Tony, does Tony tell you things? Yes. How does he tell you things? It's like when I go to sleep, he shows me things, but when I wake up, I can't remember everything. Does your mom and dad know about Tony? Yes. Do they know that Tony tells you things? Tony never told me to tell them. So this goes on and on. That is a really bad impersonation of that scene, but I do think it's your first clue that, you know, Danny has an ability that's going to help him. Now, when I think about movies like this, there are some, even though it's supernatural in some aspect, we've got storylines about, you know, a haunted hotel that won't sleep, basically. We've got a father who is trying to transition his life. He's also, you know, susceptible to the experiences happening here. But there's the struggle in the family, which is that you've got marital issues between Wendy and Jack. She obviously is not okay with her husband. He's newly sober, and but he's done some things in the past that she's upset about. One of them including, you know, being a little bit of violent with their son, Danny. Danny is struggling with his demons of being, you know, shining and psychic and being able to see things and not understanding how to handle that. And so, yeah, once I said, like I said before, this house becomes a pressure cooker of all things. And so now we're just into the story and they're living in this empty house. You know, Jack has got his typewriter set up. The scenes in this movie are so awesome. The setups. I love the simplicity of the way this typewriter is set up in the middle of this giant room with this giant fireplace. And he is just typing away, you know, he's in there. There's times when he's typing ferociously. There's times when he's doing nothing. And, you know, just like we all are in this quarantine, you watch how they handle their daily existence. However, the first person to be affected is Danny. You know, he encounters the two twins in the hallway and he's terrified, you know. The more that the story evolves, Wendy, you know, her character, and I have to say, I think that she is seen as kind of like a not important character in this movie. I think that there's a lot of perception of her performance as being kind of like not so great. But on a like rewatch of this movie, her performance is awesome. I don't care what people say. I mean, I think there are some really intense scenes between the three of them in this movie. The scenes with her and her son, there's scenes where she's talking to herself in the room, trying to figure out what she's going to do, especially towards the end. Her scene with Jack a few times in that big giant living room area or that big, whatever that area, that hall or whatever you want to call that space is, are very tense. And, the acting between the two of them, I think is awesome. And it's, you know, you feel it when you're watching it, just the intensity of it. I think they gave great performances. I don't know if they got credit for doing so. And Jack, of course, is Jack Nicholson, but he is still entertaining as hell. But he's still so believable, and then he can be also so scary, even though he is being funny and, you know, nuts at the same time. So yeah, I really do think that the performances in this are amazing. What else can we say about this film, guys? It's very hard doing this when you don't have people to answer. I wish I could ask you questions actually right now. What did you think of Jack Nicholson's performance? I don't know. I'm going to go to more of this trivia stuff so I can see what we have here to discuss. What can I share with you guys? You know, I think sometimes when I'm doing this, like, what are people doing when I'm talking? Are they like doing their dishes in their kitchen right now? Are they taking a walk in their neighborhood with a mask on, trying not to get near other people? Maybe they're driving to the grocery store. Maybe they're in the grocery. Maybe you are in the grocery store right now as we're talking, or as I'm talking and you're listening. What do you want to hear? Do you like the sound of my voice? I have so many questions for you and I get no answers, but that's okay. Let's go back to some trivia. Why don't we? So another interesting fact, the idea for Danny Lloyd to move his finger when he was talking as Tony was his own. He did it spontaneously during his first audition. Wow. Danny, you are a smart little boy. And also extremely creepy. Why would you do that? That's not a good sign. And responding to my, comment on their acting, Jack Nicholson and Shelley Duvall have expressed open resentment against the reception of this film, feeling that critics and audiences credited Stanley Kubrick solely for the film's success without considering the efforts of the actor's crew or the strength of Stephen King's underlying material. They said that the film was one of the hardest of their careers. In fact, Nicholson considers Duvall's performance the most difficult role he's ever seen an actress take on. Bam! That's right, Shelley Duvall. You kicked ass. Duvall has also considered her performance the hardest of her life. All right, so this movie is whacked on many levels. For the scene in which Jack breaks down the bathroom door, the props department built a door that could easily be broken. However, Jack Nicholson had worked as a volunteer fire marshal and tore it apart far too easily. The props department were then forced to build a stronger door. Jack, you know, I think he takes it very seriously when he takes on these roles. I mean, he just had to break down a couple doors, I guess. Another interesting fact for you guys, Angelica Houston, who was living with Jack Nicholson during the time of the shooting, recalled that due to the long hours on the set and Stanley's trademark style of repetitive takes, Nicholson would often return from a day's shooting, walk straight to the bed, collapse, and immediately fall asleep. Jack, I'm with you. I do think, though, if you're going to play a possessed father slash writer slash, I don't know what else, recovering alcoholic, I think I'd be tired too after doing that all day. So I'm with you, man. Apparently he was known, I guess I didn't know this. You know what's interesting? Stanley Kubrick was known for compulsiveness in his takes, his repetitive takes, and got the difficult shot of blood pouring from the elevators in only 3 takes. This would be remarkable if it weren't for the fact the shot took 9 days to set up. Every time the doors opened and the blood poured out, Kubrick would say, "It doesn't look like blood." In the end, the shot took approximately a year to get right. Stanley, you lunatic. What is wrong with you? That's some dedication, I have to tell you. Maybe he had something wrong with him. Maybe he was possessed by the hotel in itself. So, as the story goes on, I don't know if I need to walk you guys through every part of it. I'm just going to mention some of my favorite scenes in the movie. My favorite scenes are probably the ones that people don't think of. I actually love the scene, like I mentioned, of Dick and Danny when they first arrive in the kitchen. I love the scene of Jack and Danny on the bed. It's such an intense scene where he is basically like telling Danny that he loves him and he cares about him and he would never hurt him. And, you know, it's supposed to be a very calm scene, but the tension in the scene is so high because Danny is like very aware that his father is not okay at this point and he's scared of him. And his father's trying to be a loving, confirming father in some way, but it does not go well. And it doesn't end with anything really happening at all, except just the quiet, weird tension of the scene, which I just love that. I also love the scene where, of course, he freaks out on Wendy when she goes to interrupt him while he's typing on the computer. And, you know, it's a very classic scene, but I actually love that scene a lot. It's one of my favorite scenes. I'm going to give you guys some more interesting facts. This is the scene I was talking about. Jack Nicholson claimed that the scene where Jack snaps at Wendy for interrupting his writing was the most difficult for him, as he was a writer himself and had gotten into similar arguments with his girlfriend. Did you now, Jack? Maybe you're a little bit too intense as well. Being a method actor, he drew on his memories of those arguments and added the line, quote, "Or if you come in here and you don't hear me typing, or if I'm in here, that means I'm working." God, I'm really bad at reading this stuff to you guys. I think I'm better when I have a person to listen and talk to while I'm doing this. So I'm bitching again. Let's see what else. The Shining was eventually readapted as a 1997 miniseries that follows Stephen King's book more closely. And I did not see that. So now I'm very curious and I may have to see that. Kind of interested in that as well. Let's see what else we've got here. Blah, blah, blah. Do you feel like killing your kids? I'm just kidding. I love my kids. I actually have no interest in family arguments and disruption at this moment in time. Everybody seems to be getting along famously in our quarantine, in our own isolation, which I do appreciate. And I'm enjoying watching all these movies. He wanted to shoot the film in script order. This meant having all the relevant sets standing by at all times. In order to achieve this, every soundstage at the studios was used with all the sets built, pre-lit, and ready to go during the entire shoot at the studio. You know, I think there should be a movie about how insane Kubrick is, because this is just crazy. The most famous fact that we're going to get into here is about the hotel and the story itself. Now I'm just tangenting all over the place, but that's what I do. Sidebars left and right for you and me. Stephen King got the idea for the book while his family was staying at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. They were the last guests before it shut down for the winter. He saw a group of nuns leaving the hotel, and it got him thinking that the place had suddenly become godless. The King family stayed in room 217, the haunted room in the novel, but room 237 in the film. A fire hose also resembled a snake, which doesn't appear in the movie, but does in The Shining television miniseries. And King had already been playing around with a story idea about a boy with ESP, so he combines the two plot lines. That's nuts. And I do think, actually, that the Stanley Hotel is haunted. Stella actually mentioned that she wanted to go there, which I thought was like amazing. And I keep joking that maybe the next thing I need to do is get a van or a camper van or an RV or something, custom van life, and just hit the road, man, and start hitting really interesting places. Maybe podcasting with strangers all across the country. Maybe that's what can happen. Maybe even during an isolation, if I just get myself into a van and start traveling across the country, popping up on neighborhoods, maybe people will come out of their homes and podcast from 6 feet away. I don't know. It might just be a small dream, but maybe we can make it happen. Should I start a Patreon page? Do I need to get a Kickstarter? What do you guys want from me? I'll do anything that you need. Okay. Let's get this dream to happen. Don't you want me to come to you personally, in your person, in your face, with a mask on, maybe a hazmat suit? I think this could work. I really do. I certainly would definitely like to go check out all these creepy places. That's for sure. Is this turning into a horror podcast? It might be, but not yet. I definitely will return to some old classics. Haven't done a real comedy yet. That might be in the works. We'll have to see. Let's go to Wikipedia, guys. Let's see. What else can I tell you? There is a lot of information here, and I am not a quick reader, so we are not going to go there. But I think I am going to take a look at the Stanley Hotel. It is still in existence, and we can go there. This is crazy. It doesn't look anything like the movie hotel. Disappointing. But I would love to go in there, maybe even just for fun, recreate some scenes, get myself a typewriter, slam it into the middle of the main lobby. Anything is possible, guys. Anything. Anything is possible with your help, with your support. I might be able to do more than I had planned. But I would like to give you some other interesting facts about this film before we leave. Before I end this podcast, this very short podcast, what can I tell you? What can I tell you? I will tell you, as this movie progresses, Jack does not finish his book. Jack Torrance, I am speaking of. It turns out, in a shocking twist, that all that writing he's been doing is just that it's nothing. It's all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. And that is for sure. Definitely makes me a dull girl, all work and no play. So all I do is play. So I'm not dull. What do you want from me? What else can I tell you about this?
I just want to finish my work.
Okay. Wikipedia has given me some interesting stuff here, which I totally agree with. Let me give you my obvious review of this and the reason I love this movie. I've said many things: the settings, the sets, the visuals, the actors, the story. The slow burn that I like about this movie is that it does leave a lot to your own interpretation. And it, even though it does explain certain things, I think what's unexplained is what makes it awesome. Just the visuals alone, if you want to settle in for a visual experience, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. And it's still impressive today in 2020, looking at a movie from 1980. Apparently this movie did not do well at the time. I mean, it did okay. It got a lot of criticism. In 2006, Roger Ebert, who was initially critical of the work, inducted the film into his great movie series, saying Stanley Kubrick's cold and frightening The Shining challenges us to decide who is the reliable observer, whose idea of events can we trust? It is this elusive open-endedness that makes Kubrick's film so strangely disturbing. And, you know, I wonder with films like this, if it is frustrating. You know, so many times with art, people are appreciated after the fact. And it sounds like Kubrick was a little bit of a nut. Meticulous, very controlling in certain aspects. The way he had the method about doing things in filmmaking sounded like it was really hard for people. There's something I love about that certainty about your process that I just lack, to be honest with you guys. I mean, no matter what I'm doing, I am like really struggling with this indecisive stuff. And I do not have that kind of certainty about what I do, which is maybe why I love conversation. I love to talk to people and find out what makes them tick. But when it comes to art, I think that's a tough one. And I think that the sad part about that is that when people are doing great work and they think it's going to be great and then it doesn't get received that way, it's tough, you know, for artists out there. If you're listening, I feel for you. Not everyone gets recognized in their time. And so this might be one of those movies. Another critic wrote, just as the ghostly apparitions of the film's fictional Overlook Hotel would play tricks on the mind of poor Jack Torrance, so too has the passage of time changed the perception of The Shining itself. Many of the same reviewers who lambasted the film for not being scary enough back in 1980 now rank it among the most effective horror movies ever made. While audiences who hated the film back then vividly recall being terrified by the experience, The Shining has somehow risen from the ashes of its own bad press to redefine itself not only as a seminal work of the genre, but perhaps the most stately, artful horror ever made. Now, that was a quote by Peter Brock, and he was reviewing the Blu-ray release in the High Def Digest, which I've never even heard of. But you know what, Peter? You summed that one up, man. That's so true. Let's see what Stephen King has to say. He says a lot. What does he have to say about this? Speaking about the theme of the film, Kubrick stated that there's something inherently wrong with the human personality. There's an evil side to it. One of the things that horror stories can do is to show us the archetypes of the unconscious. We can see the dark side without having to confront it directly. Stephen King, who are you? Has been quoted as saying that although Kubrick made a film with memorable imagery, it was poor as an adaptation. It is the only adaptation of his novels that he could remember hating. Damn, Stephen. However, in King's 1981 nonfiction book, Danse Macabre, how do you say that? He listed Kubrick's film among those he considered to have contributed something of value to the horror genre and mentioned it as one of his personal favorites. Well, now those are two very different opinions. I will say, as a movie, I like it and I do enjoy it. And that's why I wanted to discuss The Shining. I didn't even get into psychic kids. I love the idea of psychic kids or kids that have like tap into the ability to see energy, ghosts, hauntings, anything. And I think Stephen King is also pretty fascinated with it. It's something I've always been really fascinated by, just in general, people that kind of tap into a magic that they can't explain. And actually, one really amazing thing about this film is the way that he coined it, The Shining. Now, I don't know if that comes from something else previously in terms of where Stephen King came up with it or even refers to it, but I do think whether it's a dark thing or a positive thing, the idea of having a bit of a shine on you that could allow you to pick up and receive things in the world that are good or bad, is a beautiful idea, don't you guys? I do. I just have to say that. Well, listen, this has been one very bizarre rant, and I appreciate if you hung on until the very end of this episode. Hopefully you got something out of it. If you were bored, hopefully I was good company for you. You're always good company for me. You guys are great listeners. You never interrupt me. It's really nice. And you let me talk, which I just appreciate so, so much. So I will have some extra episodes, I think, this week. I do have some really exciting things coming up. I'm probably going to be doing a live, a video version of my podcast will probably happen because now everyone is using Zoom and I'm going to attempt to do that with some guests. I might even have a 3-guest episode coming up soon. If you are enjoying the show, please like, subscribe, please rate it. Follow me on the Facebook page, The Film Effect with Tiff. Follow me on Instagram, same thing, Film Effect with Tiff. And, you know, I hope to keep doing this because it's fun and I'm enjoying it. And I hope you're enjoying it too. So thanks for joining me this week, guys. And
we're going to make a new rule. Remember, I'm in here. You hear me typing, whether you don't hear me typing, what the fuck you hear me doing in here when I'm in here, that means that I am working. That means don't come in. How do you think you can handle that?